You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour on WYLL. This is a new program. I'm president of a group called Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the gay and lesbian and bisexual, transgendered, the entire homosexual lobby. And our website is Americans for Truth, all written out, americansfortruth.org. And our goal is to bring you compelling interviews with some of the people on the front lines of this so-called culture war. And one of the most amazing parts of the culture war is the existence of many men and women who once lived the, quote, gay lifestyle, but have come out of that lifestyle. And, of course, this is something that the liberal media barely acknowledges existing. The homosexual activists say that, well, it's not really change. They never were gay in the first place, or it's like teaching a right-handed person to write left-handed. You can actually teach him, but he's still right-handed. They have all sorts of excuses. But we brought you last week part one of our interview with Pete Lines, who's somebody I'm proud to say I'm becoming a friend with, just an amazing person. He has a testimony of coming out of homosexuality. And Pete is, he appeared at the Americans for Truth banquet last year, and it really, moved people with his testimony. He's written a book called The Leader of the Band. And the subhead is, you can't be the leader of the band if you're afraid to turn and face the music. And today we'll be talking about how Pete faced the music. We've got part two of our interview with Pete Lines, who's based in Minneapolis. Pete, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, thanks for being on the program again. And last week, let's summarize just a little bit of last week's interview. We talked about your just incredibly dysfunctional upbringing. It's a family show, so we have to be careful how we talk on the air, but suffice it to say that you were molested at a young age. You were, your mother dealt with you inappropriately. She let you play with dolls. She was hyper overprotective of you as a young person. You had a rather bizarre upbringing.
Well, that's putting it mildly, I think.
You developed some bad habits, but it was almost as if you were. When I read your book, The Leader of the Band, which we're going to make available through Americans for Truth at americansfortruth.com, it's almost like your life was designed for some sort of aberrant or deviant outcome, based on how you were raised as a child. Is that fair to say?
Oh yes. I've often thought about that, and I agree with you. And because it appeared like my life was designed for that, that's why early on it was easy for me to accept that that's who I was, because that's the way I thought.
And yes.
I thought that way because it's how I was taught. It's the
yes.
only thing I knew.
And did you have problems some kind of seeing yourself as a victim? Because you were a victim. But you can't live your life as a victim, right?
Right. I don't like that word victim. And even from little on, I tried not to see myself as the victim, but realized the problem was other people and the problems that they had in their lives that were affecting mine.
Right.
Very young. It's not the kind of thing that anybody told me, because I never talked to anybody about what was going on. And I really believe it was the Holy Spirit pulling me closer to Him so that He could give me some measure of protection by the things that He was teaching me even back then.
Well, you know, there's so much to discuss, and I would refer people back to the last interview. But you were raped as a young as a teenage boy in your first job. You were because of your circumstances growing up, you were addicted to masturbation as a child, which later led to you embracing a very promiscuous homosexual life. Your mother just engaged in bizarre behavior, for example, not letting you leave the backyard until what, you were 10 years old?
A little younger than that, but certainly so, much later than it should have been.
And so your mother was worried about anything happening to you, basically, and you also were convinced that they had wanted a daughter. Is that accurate? They'd wanted a daughter, so that partly explained why she had let you play with dolls well past, you know, what, almost 8 years or something?
Well, I played with dolls until I was 12.
Wow.
And yes, I did feel like she wanted me to be a girl. I knew she wanted a son, and I knew she wanted a daughter, which she ended up with both. But my younger sister didn't really seem to fall into the category of protection from my mother, whereas I did. And so my mother wanted me close to her, and she taught me how to cook and how to sew. And she's the one who kept buying dolls for me to play with.
Right. And what I haven't mentioned is, of course, that you came to deeply resent and fear and avoid your father. Now, Can you describe that a little bit and describe the effect that has, as you see it now, on becoming a man and on gaining masculinity?
Well, it wasn't easy for me to become a man. I may have looked like a male, but I may even have acted like a male in most circumstances. But you're right, I really did resent him, and I really came to actually hate him because of the continual molestation that I didn't know what to do with. He was big, he was powerful, and I was terrified of him. And there was no male role model in my life. My maternal grandfather would have been a great role model. He spent a lot of time with me when I was very little. But then he died when I was 5 years old, and so that role model was eliminated from my life. Hmm. And after that, there wasn't any.
Wow.
And so trying to figure out how was I supposed to act as a boy, I didn't like to play sports. I didn't know how to play sports. I had gotten very heavy by the time I was 12 years old. I weighed 250 pounds. I just couldn't do much of anything except I really excelled at the things my mother wanted me to do.
And you were also a very talented, you became a very talented artist, but you weren't doing boy things. And do you find this typical? You knew many, many, many homosexual men, and I guess you would say bisexual men. I suppose you knew lesbians as well. Do you find this very typical about the lack of an appropriate role model in the home growing up?
Well, yes. That seems to be, from all the research that I've been able to read over the years, the major cause of homosexuality in both males and females is an absence, whether it's physically absent or emotionally absent, or absent because of long hours at work, whatever. There is no role model, no interaction with a parent of the same sex. But let me stop myself right there. There's also an influence of the father that is very necessary in the girl's life. And if that isn't there, if he isn't present to be her first love interest, love in quotes, if he isn't there to have somebody for her to look at and say, this is somebody I want in my life, it kind of tweaks something within some girls that causes them then to stay away from men.
Mm.
There's still a lot of research that needs to be done on this, but I personally wish that homosexuality would never have been taken out of the I can't think now, what is it?
The List of Mental Disorders.
Right, right.
By the American Psychiatric Association.
That's right.
You knew many gay men, and you also engaged in acts, of course. And did you see this outworking? Did you see things similar in your own life? The abuse and the dysfunctional upbringing, or did you not get a chance to really get to know a lot of homosexual men?
No, I did. Later in life, I got a chance to know a lot with a ministry that I had, a support group ministry to help Christian men deal with their sexual dysfunctions of any kind. But even prior to that, I did get to know a number of homosexuals in the homosexual lifestyle. And, you know, back in the 1970s, we would be sitting around and we would be talking and we would all, and I do mean all of us, would say, we don't know why we're doing the things that we do. We don't want to be this way. There was no embracing it. There was no saying, boy, this is a legitimate lifestyle. Every single man I met through those years did not want to be that way, but none of us knew what to do about it. And that was really the impetus that pushed me to decide that if anybody could change, I could, but I didn't know how to do it. And that's when God became very, very important in my life.
Well, and thank God for that, Pete. Your testimony is so inspiring to so many people. We're talking to Pete Lines, who's written a book called The Leader of the Band. He's got a wonderful ex-gay testimony. These are the people that gay activists say do not exist. And we'll be back with Pete Lines to learn more about his incredible life on the American Truth Hour on WYLL. With Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. We're very proud to be here on WYLL and sharing with you the amazing testimonies of people on the front lines of the so-called culture wars. And today we're in part two of our interview with Pete Lines, who's got a tremendous ex-gay testimony. And Pete, I'd like to ask you now, in your book, you describe the various awful things that happened to you over the years, beginning in your childhood, and then you were raped on your by a man on your first job that you had as a teenager. Describe your transition into somebody who's sort of accepted that he's gay and living the gay life. How long did that take? And describe that, if you could.
Well, it didn't take long to accept that that's the way I was, because it's the way I thought. And as I finally got out of the backyard and got to know boys in our neighborhood, it was obvious that I was different, that they didn't think the way that I did. And I was very shy, and I wouldn't talk to them. I didn't want anybody to know what was going on inside of my mind. And as I got older, I still had a desire to date girls. And I did start dating girls when I was in high school. Nothing physical happened. We were just friends, but it was really interesting to spend time with girls, because the only thing I knew about girls up to that point was what my mother had exposed me to in the world of women that she kept me isolated to when I was a child, which I didn't like.
Now,
and I was really afraid that these girls were going to be a continuation of what I had experienced, but they weren't. They were just very nice people. But the boys, I couldn't deal with. I didn't understand them all the way through high school. I had male friends, but I also knew I didn't think about the things in life the way they did. And this went beyond my sexual thoughts. It was, they couldn't wait to go out and play baseball. I didn't want to go. And so they stopped asking me after a very brief period of time, and I just waited till they came home, and then we did whatever we did, played cards or sat around and talked. Or
yeah. Is this typical? I mean, I know it is, because I've heard so many so-called gay men talk this way, but this idea of differentness, and it ends up transitioning to them to how they basically cite this difference as the proof, as it were, that they were either naturally homosexual or born that way. They cite this differentness.
Exactly, and I can understand that, because as I've said several times now, that's the way I thought. And so it was easy for me to say, well, this must be who I am.
Right.
But for some reason, I never blamed God. Even though I didn't like it, I never blamed God. I didn't think this was something that he had done to me, which was another one of the reasons why I wanted to find out how it all came about.
Right.
And I feel very fortunate that God took me on a journey throughout my life, that I was able to go back and fit the pieces together.
Many, many homosexual men don't get that far. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times, of saying, I prayed to get this away. I asked God to take this away from me, and he didn't. And they almost cite that as validation of their so-called sexual orientation.
Yes, a lot of men do that.
What would you say to them?
Well, when I was directing support group ministries, we would have a number of guys who would come in over the years, and I did this for 7 years with my first ministry. And they would say, well, you know, I've been here for 2 weeks, or I've been here for 2 months, or I've been here for 3 years, or whatever, and nothing's happened. I'm no different. I can't change, and as far as I'm concerned, this is the way I am. I had one young man who had become a friend of mine. He ended up leaving his wife and his children, and he was also a youth pastor, and he ended up leaving his church over this issue because he just felt like he could not live what he considered to be the lie, because he felt too strongly the attraction for men. And several months after he left our group, he called me and he said, I'm happy for the first time in my life. He said, this is what I've always wanted. And I realized at that very instant when he said he was happy, it was the first time in his life that Satan backed off. Satan didn't have to try to convince him of who he was. He now had him in his grasp.
Wow.
And because Satan backed off, he felt a release of the pressure, and he just accepted the lifestyle.
It's like throwing up that white flag, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Exactly.
And you must have seen that over and over and over again, and yet it's a man-centered way of looking at the world. I feel, therefore I am, and it by definition ignores or rejects what God thinks about something. And so there has to be that sort of God rejection, right, as they make that leap to acceptance rather than trying to resist.
Right. As I was leaving the lifestyle, I still had times when I fell back into it, and I thought about it. The constant thought that I had about what I was doing was, okay, I can please myself here, or I can please God, because I'm convinced he doesn't want me to do this. Now, which is more important, satisfying my sexual appetite or satisfying God? And more, I move toward wanting to please my Heavenly Father.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that's a question that is one that many men can relate to. They face that same choice, correct?
Exactly.
They can please themselves. They can entertain thoughts that are not wholesome, that are not pure. They can get involved with pornography. I mean, I think there's a tendency sometimes to separate out the homosexual issue, and it is it's a different issue in the minds of most people because it's alien to them. But it all falls under the same classification of sin, things that God disapproves of.
Right. As I say in the end of my book, I try to give a definition of sin. And the best definition I ever heard was that sin is anything that becomes more important to us than God is.
Yes.
And that takes it out of the sexual arena. That takes it into everyday life for every single one of us who has ever lived, lives now, or ever will live in the future. God wants to be the most important person in our life. And that's the order of things. But when you take an identity that God has given you as a male or a female, and you decide that this is not how you want to live, and it is a choice we all make, no matter what anybody says, at some point we make that choice to say, this is more important to me than God is. I am replacing God with my desire to be whatever.
Hmm. Well, we hear all the time this thing of, and I understand what they're trying to say, but we hear people say nobody chooses to be gay, but that's a sort of a simplistic way of describing it, it seems to me, because you choose how you respond. Everybody doesn't have the same urges or the same temptations, but we all do have a choice as to how we respond, correct?
That's correct. But I understand that argument as far as it goes. And it's right. I don't think anybody ever chooses to be homosexual or lesbian. Just take a look at my own life. Before I knew there were choices to make, I was exposed to sexual activity, which altered the way I should have thought. It altered the natural course of how I would mature and grow up. And so it was easy for me to say, this is who I am. I didn't make this choice.
Right.
At no point in my childhood did I say, this is who I want to be. But there comes a time for every one of us, somehow, later in life, early in life, whenever, I think it's whenever God chooses to bring that choice before us in our individual lives, where we have to say, okay, do I want to continue doing the things I've been doing, or do I want to change? Now, as Christians, we have a real strong reason to change. We want to please our Heavenly Father. The world doesn't have that strong influence, which is one of the reasons why homosexuality is now gaining as much acceptance as it is. The world has got no reason to say, this is a standard that I want to live up to. I want to do what pleases me. And too many Christian people fall in line with that for whatever their reasons are.
Yes, and you know, we've heard so much now about gay Christians. Give me your reaction to that phrase. We wouldn't talk about adulterous Christians.
Right. Yeah, the reason I sighed is because that's a term I really hate, gay Christians. Number one, I don't think, let's go back to something I said in the last program.
Okay, we got about a minute.
Okay, there's no such thing as a homosexual and a lesbian, not as a created being. These are behaviors. So when you say gay Christian, you're really giving importance to the identity of being gay. What we should say is that these are people who act out homosexually. So to be Christian and act out homosexually, yeah, that can happen, because we all sin in one way or another.
Yes.
But to have it as an identity, that doesn't do anybody any good, especially the person who has embraced the identity.
And is proud about it and advocating it.
I don't think anybody's proud about it, to tell you the truth. I think that's just to pump themselves up and say, well, I'm okay the way I am. I'm proud.
Right.
It's a lie.
Wow. Well, Pete, this is wonderful stuff, and I think it's going to be so helpful to people who hear this interview. My name is Peter LaBarbera. I'm president of Americans for Truth about Homosexuality. You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour on WYLL. Our website is americansfortruth.org. We'll be back after the break with Pete Lines. You're listening to Peter LaBarbera and the Americans for Truth Hour. Americans for Truth is a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the very powerful and influential homosexual activist movement. Today we're talking to, in part two of our interview, with Pete Lines, who Pete is a man who once considered himself gay, and now he is a Christian man. He's left the lifestyle, and he has helped many, many people leave the lifestyle, and he's told his story, his testimony, in a book called The Leader of the Band, which we will be making available through Americans for Truth. Also, I'm delighted to report that we will be having Pete come to Americans for Truth. Stay tuned on our website. We'll be announcing it, but Pete will be coming to give his testimony at Americans for Truth at our offices in Carroll Stream, Illinois. So, Pete, let's get to your you've had these experiences as a teenager. You went to Bible school, of all places, and were essentially is it accurate to say you were raped on the campus by another man, or you were there were homosexuals right there at the Christian college?
Yes. There were some people who, again, Peter, acted out homosexually. I don't want to give them the identity of being homosexual on the campus.
Right.
Behavior was there, as well as almost any other sexual sin that you can think of. It was alive and well on that small Bible college campus.
And you don't want to say where that college is, but was this a school that professed to believe the Bible?
Absolutely.
And so you're there at Bible College. You're training as a minister, and you have these homosexual encounters, which bring you shame, as it were.
Yes, I ended up having a. Well, it's close to a nervous breakdown, if I guess a person can come. I don't really think I tipped over into having a nervous breakdown, but I sure was a mess.
And describe now how you're entering. Describe your sort of transition to the promiscuous gay life. You say at one point in the book that you had 1,000 partners, but you had many more than that. Explain that transition and how typical. Was your life compared to, say, the average gay man's life?
Well, my life was not typical.
You got married. You got married.
Right. The people who are involved with homosexuality have many partners, but most of them don't rack up the number that I did. And I wasn't keeping score. Just as I chose to leave the lifestyle, I started wondering, well, just how active have I been? And I just took the number of partners that I knew that I had on an average every day, because it became an everyday addiction for me. And over the number of years that I did it, I came out with a figure that I just couldn't believe. And that was, again, one of the things that pushed me away from the lifestyle.
But before we leave that, and I want to get to your marriage, but... Again, here it's so fascinating, and I wonder why, you know, how well this explains the promiscuity that we see in the so-called gay male subculture. You yourself were addicted at a young age to, early inappropriate sexuality, masturbation. And then you go into the gay life, and ultimately, here you had this sort of bizarre early sexuality, hypersexuality at a young age, inappropriate for a boy, and then it translates later on. You have this addiction, sexual addiction, that's simply lived out homosexually as an adult.
Right. What happened is I, in a sense, I changed that hypersexuality of masturbating when I was young into a hypersexuality of having sex partners when I was older. Starting in my early 20s and ending at age 30, 31 in that age group.
And Pete, the ease with which you found partners testifies to obviously the troubled patterns in the lives of all these other men. I mean, if it weren't so easy, you couldn't make a generalization about the rampant promiscuity that's there. Let's face it, it's very easy to find sex in the gay male subculture. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, yes, it's an accurate statement, but this might surprise you. The great majority of men that I had sex with were not part of the gay culture.
Right.
These are straight, in quotes, men who wanted to deviate from that, wanted to experience something different. Back in the 1970s, when I was... most of my activity happened during the decade of the 70s. It was free love, do your own thing. If it feels good, do it. And there are a lot of straight men who wanted to experiment, and I found them. everywhere I went, I managed to find people like that. I always look younger than I am. Of course, it's starting to catch up with me now. But when I was younger, I always looked younger. And men who were interested always found me. I never went after them, although I could be seductive, and I knew that. I always waited for a man to approach me, and it never took very long for that to happen.
But, yeah, and I like your point there. And the problem I have is the whole discussion of this issue, because we don't really believe there's anybody who's gay. It comes down to behavior, like you said. And even to this day, you have people who, I guess a lot of them may call themselves bisexual, but you have people practicing behavior, and then they leave the behavior, and people go into the behavior. And yet the problem is the way it's discussed in the media is you're either... The implication is you're either born gay or you're not. And so it creates this false duality, and whereas really it still comes down to behavior.
That's exactly right. It still comes down to behavior.
And if anybody wasn't gay, it was you. I mean, you were, I don't believe in the concept of gay, but I mean, you certainly were the victim of these awful circumstances. And so, you know, it's pretty hard to make a case that you were born gay. You had these incredible circumstances in your life growing up.
Right. And I don't for a minute believe that I was born gay. Because that's the way I thought. I believed it. But as I look back on my life, as I've learned more about God's design for human sexuality, as I've learned more about how strong I am in being able to make correct choices, there's no way that I was ever gay.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to Scripture, and this is one of the arguments that's out there, the Bible really doesn't talk about this. Well, if you read the Bible has a lot to say about it. It just doesn't say it the way we're talking about it now.
Yes. So, the Bible addresses behavior, not some sort of homosexual identity, right, Pete?
That's right. And what the Bible is saying, what God is saying to us, is that there's nothing wrong with feelings of love. After all, as Christians, we're told to love everybody, love each other, as Christ has loved you. As Christ has loved you is the important thing there. And too many people take this idea that, well, this is proof that I'm gay because I love another man, or a woman loves another woman. But feelings of love, there's nothing wrong with that. That's not sin. God condemns the act, the physical act of sex between members of the same gender.
So homoeroticism, it's the eroticism of the love is where it enters the sin realm.
That's right. And that's a choice to become erotic or not erotic with any other human being or with an animal or with a thing, you name it. It's all out there. That's sin because, as I said earlier, at that point somebody is making that more important to them than God is.
Pete, we have a couple minutes before the next break. Tell me about your marriage and how the gayness stayed alive through the marriage.
Well, I believe I fell in love with my wife before we got married. But I'm not sure because there was nothing in my past that would say, oh, this is what love is supposed to be. I looked at my parents' marriage. I looked at their relationship with their children. I looked at a number of my relatives, and I didn't really have modeled for me love. So I'm not 100% certain I love my wife. She had her problems. I had mine. We were two very needy people who chose to get married, both thinking that what we could do is that we could help the other person. But, of course, that didn't happen. We stayed married for 7 years, and to a lot of people, we looked like the ideal couple because we were very good at pretending that everything was all right. But after the third year of marriage, she told me she didn't want any more sex. And she told me to feel free to go get it any place I wanted to. Just don't come home and tell her. Now, I believe what she thought she was doing was that she was releasing me to go get a girlfriend or something like that. But all through our marriage, I had still acted out homosexually without her knowing it. And I knew that I wasn't going to have any trouble finding sex because I had always managed to do that anyway. And that's the way we lived for 4 years.
Wow. Wow. Pete, your life is extraordinary. I think it has a lot to teach. It has a lot to teach people who are brainwashed by the media. We're talking to Pete Lyons, who's an ex-gay, who's going to be coming to Illinois to speak at an Americans for Truth event. Stay tuned on our website at americansfortruth.org. We'll come back with our final segment of our two-part interview with Pete Lyons, who left the gay lifestyle. This is Peter LaBarbera with the Americans for Truth Hour. Everybody, you're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour on WYLL, 1160 AM and outside Chicago. We're talking tonight with Pete Lyons, who's a friend of mine, who's a former homosexual. Pete is an incredible story. I encourage you to order his book, The Leader of the Band. It will be made available through Americans for Truth. Our website is americansfortruth.org, and Pete will be coming to Carroll Stream, Illinois, to speak at Americans for Truth. Stay tuned on our website for the date, which is coming up. Pete, briefly and as best as you can, summarize your way out of the homosexual lifestyle. I know that's hard to do in a few minutes, but we want to ask you questions about the help you've given to others. But how did the Lord draw you out of this lifestyle? Here you had not just hundreds of sexual partners, but you actually had over 1,000. You said 2,000 promiscuous sexual encounters, you know, anonymous types. Explain how the Lord drew you out of that destructive lifestyle.
Well, the first thing he did was just absolutely amazing to me. As I started engaging in sex with a man, all of a sudden my mind would be flooded with him.
With the Lord.
From the Lord, believe me, because it wasn't anything I wanted in my head. But it ruined the mood, so to speak, and I couldn't function over and over and over again.
So let me clarify. You started thinking of God when you're engaged in this perversion.
Yes. And at one point, I even started visualizing Jesus sitting on the edge of the bed while I was in bed with a man, encouraging me to stop what I was doing. And it's an example, an extreme example, but it is an example of the truth that God comes after us. He comes after everyone that he wants to pull close to him, which quite frankly is everyone in the human race, if we just look for those opportunities. And then I realized that through people that I knew and through sermons that I heard, you know, all the Christian things that can happen, God had been drawing me to him for a very long time, probably my entire life, that I was blocking it out. And one of the ways I blocked it out was believing the lie that I wasn't good enough for God. And at some point when I saw that as a lie, I wanted to know what he wanted. And I was angry about it. Just, what do you want out of me? Why won't you leave me alone? And I didn't give him an opportunity to answer that. But through our marriage, we adopted a little boy. He was right out of the hospital when we got him. When he was 2 years old, my wife chose to break up our marriage for whatever her reasons were. She didn't know about my homosexuality, and she left. And she left a two-year-old with me to raise. And I remembered what my father had done to me, and I swore to God that I would never do anything to pervert that child, that if I was going to raise this child, I was going to raise him for God. And I knew at that moment that my life had to change. And that's when I said, okay, I'm turning my back on this lifestyle. And I pretty much at that moment did turn away from the lifestyle, but then immediately discovered that I was addicted to sex. The sex wasn't easy to walk away from. The thoughts, the feelings, the desire to be with men, that was gone. But I couldn't do without the sex. And it took another year or so of drawing closer to God, of calling out to Him in the midst of having sex with somebody, and just wanting to please Him and not myself. And I kept looking at my little boy, how much he loved me and how much I loved him, and the desire for him to become a godly man, because I didn't think I was. I wanted my son to have a much different type of life than I did. And if it was going to be my responsibility, because I was going to be his parent as a single father, then I had to change, or I was going to expose him to a lifestyle I didn't want him near.
Can I interject there? Your heart must break when you see this movement of gay adoption, so-called, and the homosexual parenting movement, which defends, it encourages innocent children being brought up in homosexual-led households.
It really does break my heart. It's something that I'm very passionate about, but that should never be allowed to happen. But again, the world doesn't think the way I do, or the way Christians do, or the way God wants us to think. And so they're moving very rapidly into that arena where that's an okay thing. These children, none of them are going to grow up normal, no matter what anybody says. Two mommies or two daddies is never going to work raising children the way God wants them to be. What happens is that when you have that kind of a so-called family with two of the same-sex parents, they're going to be raising your children in their image instead of God's image.
Wow. Just they're modeling, rather than modeling noble, godly values, they're modeling deviance to the young child, and next to God, they are the most important thing in that child's life.
Absolutely.
Now, Pete, you came out of homosexuality. How long was it? So you gradually, these sexual encounters became less and less fulfilling. And when was the point where you said, okay, that's it. You're totally out. Was it a gradual thing? And finally you were totally done with it.
Give or take a month or two, 30 years ago.
And so you've been clean. You have escaped homosexuality. You are the living proof of that person exists, which the homosexual activists say doesn't exist. I mean, I guess suppose they would still say, "Oh, Pete, you just changed your behavior," but God has changed you. He's changed the very essence of who you thought you were, or you never really thought you were gay. But He's helped you overcome this terribly addictive behavior.
Well, that's all true.
What do you say to the doubting gay? What do you say to the doubting gay activist?
Well, one of the things that I want to say here is something that I would say to the doubting gay activist, because I've been asked this question many times about, do I still have a desire for homosexual activity? No, I don't. But do I still get tempted? Yes, occasionally I do. Because I have an enemy, Satan, who knew that he controlled me for many years with homosexuality. And he doesn't just give up and go away completely. And when that happens, which is very infrequent, the older I get, the less opportunity there is for those temptations to even come near me. But the first thing that happens is, I pull within myself and I go to God and I say, okay, why am I being tempted now? What's going on in my life now, at this very moment, that this is the time that my enemy chose to come against me like this? And it usually can very easily, very quickly be identified. I'm sick. I'm not feeling good. I was rejected in a business opportunity or something like that. There's something that has happened that triggered ancient ways of thinking for me, and about, oh, I'm terrible, I'm no good, I'm never going to amount to anything, because that was one of the things my mother taught me. She told me over and over and over again when I was a child, you'll never amount to anything. And that was something that I still deal with from time to time. I look at the things, I have to go back and look at the things that I have accomplished in this life. get rid of my mother's voice in my head saying, you will never amount to anything.
Well, you have amounted to very much, Pete, as all God's children have, and I commend you for your courage, and I commend you for telling your story. We've had a wonderful two-part interview with Pete Lines, and he will be coming to Americans for Truth. Stay tuned on our website, AmericansForTruth.org, for the details of his visit. Pete, thank you so much for telling your story.
Well, you're welcome, Peter, and I look forward to being with you.
God bless.
The Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 1 a.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a city shining on a hill. And once again, one nation under God. Tune in at 1 a.m. next Saturday on AM 1160.